Blog Talk Radio.
Sure I am that this day, now, we are the masters of our fate. That the task which has been set us is not above our strength. That its pangs and toils are not beyond our endurance. As long as we have faith in our cause and an unconquerable willpower, salvation will not be denied us. In the words of the psalmist, he shall not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord. Not all the tidings will be evil. On the contrary, mighty strokes of war have already been dealt against the enemy. Wounds have been inflicted, which have bitten deep and will fester and inflame. What kind of a people do they think we are? Is it possible they do not realize that we shall never cease to persevere against them until they have been taught a lesson which they and the world will never forget? Here we are, together, facing a group of mighty foes who seek our ruin. Here we are, together, defending all that to free men is dear. If we had taken common measures for our safety, this renewal of the curse need never have fallen upon us. Do we not owe it to ourselves, to our children, to tormented mankind, to make sure that these catastrophes do not engulf us? It is not given to us to peer into the mysteries of the future. Still I avow my hope and faith, sure and inviolate, that in the days to come, the British people will, for their own safety and for the good of all, walk together in majesty, in justice, and in peace.
And before we start the show, I would just like to make one comment, Dave. This is I've got to say this. I hope that the WHO, with Roger Daltrey, sues this organisation who calls themselves the WHO. How dare they use a name like that as a sham? And basically, every time I think of the WHO, I think of the great group with Roger Daltrey and the WHO, which was an absolutely awesome thing. This World Health Organization, how dare you choose the name of one of the greatest bands of all time? How dare you? Roger, I hope you sue these horrible people. With that, let me go on to the show now. Just need to get off my chest. As I say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Fence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, once again, I've got a thank you, Dave, for the great slides and the great script as usual. Tonight's the banner of the show, the title of the show is the English Defence League radio show, Arbitrary Days. How about that? So welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider-Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is Dave Agadol-Milner. Tonight we'll be discussing headlines of moment. The Mohammedan festival of skipping lunch and violent jihad continues, but in these arbitrary days, our cowardly governments use their power in arbitrary ways. We are a strong point of resistance to terrorism from without and from within. No surrender ever. All that's necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. That was by the late, great Edmund Burke. And those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And, of course, that was by the late, great President John F. Kennedy. Oh, out of virtue... I think that got you. You didn't realise I was going to say that, Dave, did you? Let me pass it over to my wingman for this evening. So, Dave Agadol-Milner, good evening, my dear friend and colleague. How are you? And how is the great United States today?
Good evening to you, Jeff. Good evening, everybody in the UK. And a good day to everybody in the United States. Hello, everybody around the world and, of course, off Earth. Yeah, Jeff. Well, first of all, Jeff, I gotta comment. I mean, I agree with you completely when it comes to the WHO. It just drives me insane, I have to say, to hear some of these people when they report on that horrible organization. To actually call it the WHO, and I'm like, okay, yeah. If I were in the members of that band, I would be suing you guys no end. I mean, the WHO has provided such joy to people over the years for being the rockin' one of the oh my God, you know, one of the gold standards of rock and roll. You know what I'm saying? And
it was my generation, Dave. that was my generation. That was a lot of us. Our generation, wasn't it? That's where the tune comes. My generation. People try to bring us down, talking about my chair. I'll burst in the tune. What I'm like. Sorry, Dave, back to you.
I have a story about that song, but I'll save it for another time, Jeff. That point, though, is this World Health Organization, basically, they ought to call it the Wuhan Health Organization. It's pretty much run by China. They bow down to them. It's disgusting. But anyway, Jeff, we are...
It seems like your president has absolute, you know, where he was talking nice things about China and the leaders of China. Mr. Trump isn't talking that way. Now, he's pissed off of them, Dave. It was quite obvious what I heard him say today. And I don't blame him when he looks around and sees how many of you good people have fallen foul of this horrible, disgusting disease that they basically created to bring about into our world. But Dave, back to you. Sorry, mate. Good, Dave.
Well, Jeff, yeah, I get you, man. I get you. And yeah, the point is being diplomatic. Now he's telling the truth. Anyway, brother, I sent you a story that I found.
Certainly did, mate.
And I want to say, guys, before Jeff gets into this story, that much of what you hear today is you know, we're a team here, and we both look up stories and things. But Jeff has really been doing some yeoman's work in the background. He's dug up a few things today, so he's to be congratulated for some nice news hound work there. Well, Jeff, now...
My other nickname, ladies and gentlemen, is Night Owl, and I do sit late into the night checking things out, as Dave knows, don't you, Dave? But no, thank you, Dave, for passing that to me so we can open our show with some absolutely awesome news. Thank you, Dave.
All right, man. Well, whenever you're ready, you know, we don't have to read the whole thing, man. But
yeah,
you know, just like the highlights of it. That's because it's fairly cool.
Yeah, no, it's an absolutely awesome story, and we wondered how long it would be before this actually happened. And anyway, let me go on to read. I don't want to spoil it for you awesome listeners out there. And this comes from the Mail Online. And the headline is, Arise, Sir Tom. Colonel Tom Moore, he wasn't a colonel before. What was he, a captain before, wasn't he, Dave? Colonel Tom Moore is to be knighted after raising astonishing, £39 million for the National Health Service by walking 100 laps of his garden during coronavirus lockdown. And bear with me while I go down the page a little bit. And I went down too far. Just bear with me. I will be with you.
He's going to find the bullet
points,
guys.
Colonel Tom Moore is to be recognised further with a knighthood. The World War II veteran received a special nomination from the Prime Minister. Colonel Moore raised £32.8 million and with a gift aid, the total was increased to £39 million. Government says other unsung heroes of pandemic to be honoured soon. Here's how to help people impacted by COVID-19. He has lifted spirits of the nation with his £39 million fundraising effort to celebrate turning 100. What awesome. I love reading these type of stories, though. My page keeps jumping, so if I do stop now and again and pause, it's because I'm having a little slight problem with the page. It's just going up too quick, is what it should be. Now Colonel Tom Moore, who has already been promoted from captain, is the minister, say, as a colonel, to be recognised further with a knighthood. It was revealed last night. Knighthood last. That's brilliant. The Second World War veteran received a special nomination from the Prime Minister, which is to become the first of dozens of coronavirus crisis. Crisis gongs. Let me see. Boris Johnson described him as a national treasure and said he had provided a beacon of light through the COVID-19 crisis. I would agree with that sentiment, actually. I'm going to try to go down this page without going down too quick. Oh, there you go. That's a bit better. So, awesome pictures. Awesome pictures of Colonel Tom, and in his army uniform. What fantastic pictures they are. As I say, Charities Together say it's vitally important to set up hospital wellness rooms in bed to improve the mental health of heroes hospital staff. 6 weeks ago, National Health Charities Together, NHS membership body for the local health service fundraisers, launched the coronavirus appeal and has since raised an incredible, listen to this figure, Dave, £116 million. That is amazing, isn't it? Ellen Alton, the organisation chief executive from Warwick, appeared on Good Morning Britain today, where she told that NHSCT, the organisation Colonel Tom Moore, fundraised over £39 million, for and has donated £20 million to local trusts already. Let me read down. This is a wonderful story. Isn't it a wonderful story to read already? She explained that 1 in 3 of their local hospitals have already set up a wellness rooms so staff are able to relax in an area away from their unit and socialise with staff members. They may have been separated from during the coronavirus crisis. It is vital we take care of the National Service staff who are looking after patients, said Ellie. We need our NHS staff to be fit and well to care for our patients. We talk about the NHS heroes and their humans, giving them a space that is about their well-being, giving them time to reflect, look after themselves, to talk to colleagues, or just be quiet, vitally important so they can continue giving the very best care possible to patients. And I would agree with that. Been under a lot of pressure, aren't they, these fine people. Ellie explained there are 240 National Health Service charities in the country, 234 of which are members of the NHSCT and receive grants through the organisation, with several using whatever space they can to create a new space for their staff. Oh, it could be the end of that story. No, there's still more. Just bear with me. The story continues, because there's lots of pictures here, guys. Sir Thomas Ray is the remarkable SFA 32. Have I read this? Let me just continue. For the NHS charities, by walking more than 100 laps of his garden on his wheeled frame before his 100th birthday last month. The figure went up £39 million with gift aid. His honour, which has been approved by the Queen, will formally be announced today. Last night, Sir Tom said, "I'm absolutely overwhelmed. Never for one moment I could have imagined to be awarded with such a great honour. I'd like to thank Her Majesty the Queen, the Prime Minister, and the great British public. I remain at your service." Oh, bless him. This started as something small, and I've been overwhelmed by the gratitude and love from the British public and beyond. We must take this opportunity to recognise our frontline heroes of the National Health Service who put their lives at risk every day to keep us safe. The government says other unsung heroes who have been fighting coronavirus will also be honoured in the coming months. I hope so. I really do. There's a lot of heroes there. Special honours list is to be released in the autumn to recognise all those who have distinguished themselves during the crisis, according to The Sun. The Prime Minister recommended Sir Tom be exceptionally honoured. That is the most highest award you could be, exceptionally honoured by the Prime Minister's words. It's very, very honoured words, actually, for his fundraising achievement. Number 10 said, Mr. Johnson said, "Colonel Tom's fantastic fundraising broke records, inspired the whole country, and provided us all with a beacon light through the fog of coronavirus." And there was a little bit more. On behalf, Mrs. Boris still continued, "On behalf of everyone who has been moved by the incredible story, I want to say a huge thank you. He's a true national treasure. Further plans on how frontline heroes will be honoured will be set up in the coming months," an official statement said. "Details will be given on how the public will be able to play their part. A government spokesman said, "We know there was a huge appetite to say thank you to all those supporting the nation during this emergency and doing incredible things day in and day out, up and down the country. We will ensure these unsung heroes are recognised in the right way at the right time, and I might be coming to the end of that story. I'm still got, there's lots of pictures there, absolutely loads. So Tom, who lives with his younger daughter, Hannah Ingram Moore, her husband, who had their two children in Marston, Mortain, Bedfordshire, began Just Giving page with the aim of raising, listen to this, babe, just £1,000 for the NHS workers by walking 100 laps of the family's garden before his 100th birthday. Yesterday, the sum raised for the National Health Service charities together stood at nearly 33, well, we know it's £39 million altogether, and that's fantastic. That will never be surpassed. His 100th birthday on April the 30th was marked with several accolades. The former soldier in the 145th Regiment Royal Armoured Corps was made an honorary colonel by the Queen and an honorary member of the England cricket team. Oh, but he loved that. That's pretty awesome, mate. That is great, isn't it? I bet he'd love to have a game of cricket, but he'd rather watch it. If he's like me, he'd rather watch it. He was also awarded, this is wonderful, Dave, he was awarded the freedom of the City of London. Unfortunately, I wouldn't advise Tom to go around different parts of London. You'd be welcome there, Tom. None of us are welcome in them parts of London. But God bless you.
Brother,
come up, you visit us any time you want, brother. You so deserve it. A Spitfire, listen to this, Dave. A Spitfire and Hurricane soared over his home in a flypast organised by the RAF. While a sea of birthday cards, listen to this figure, ladies and gentlemen, 140,000 sent from all over the world, some with gifts, went on display at his grandson Benji's school in Bedford. And let me come down this. So Tom, whose wife Pamela died in 2006 after 38 years of marriage, also released a charity single, You Never Walk Alone, with singer Michael Ball. It quickly topped the charts, making him the oldest artist ever to have a UK number one. And the other people don't know, I don't think he's the only one. Anyway, I'm going to continue because there's a bit more of the story. And you know what? It's good that we cover things up because you only cover stories like this once in a life, don't you, Dave? Once in a lifetime. And it goes also from Yorkshire to India. Colonel Tom Moore, career in the military. Captain Tom Moore, Captain Tom Moore, was conscribed to the British Army in June 1940 when he was 20, alongside all men aged 20 to 36. He began his military career in Otley, West Yorkshire, where he joined the 8th Battalion, the Duke of Wellington Regiment, and the Lieutenant Lord George Savile, not Jimmy Savile, but Lord George. The regiment was sent to train in Wadenbridge at Cornwall, where they were tasked and coastal defence amid a predicted German invasion. A young Captain Moore was soon promoted to corporal and sent to the office cadet training unit in Droitwich Spa. Here he celebrated his 21st birthday after he'd passed as second lieutenant. Whoa. In August 1941, he was sent to the DWR headquarters in Halifax, where he joined the 9th Battalion in Winchcombe. The infantry battalion then converted to an armoured regiment, 146 Royal Armoured Corps, though the majority of the soldiers could not drive. In October, the unit was posted to Bombay, now Mumbai, in India. The journey took 6 weeks by sea, and with a four-day delay in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and a four-day stop in Cape Town. Captain Moore then took a train from Bombay to Pune before arriving at Kirky, a town now known as Cardkey. Cardkey. The 9th DWR, Falsted, 50th Indian Tank Brigade, under the command of Brigadier Schreiber. Let me go down. There's more to the story. Captain Moore was then asked by the Brigadier to start a motorcycling courier for the brigade due to his expertise for the sport. The brigade was then ordered to move to Calcutta. The road journey was in a monsoon and took 3 weeks. My goodness me. And then took part in exercises in the Arakan before moving further west and south of Bangdan. Captain Moore was then sent on a course at the approved vehicle depot in Bovington, England. He remained here as an instructor until it was closed. There's a lot more to this story, but I don't think it's going to take half the show if I continue. Oh, what a great legacy for this this old gentleman, Dave. I'm going to finish it there because I salute you, sir. Thank you for what you did, and my goodness, still serving your country. It's amazing. What an achievement he's made, Dave. You know, I'll continue to sing that that gentleman's praises. Wonderful. Back to you, Dave.
Right, Jeff. Well, you know, that it's an incredible story for an incredible life, and certainly worth note and notice. And you know, it's something we don't have here in the United States as far as knighthoods and things like that go. But you know, his exploits as a veteran, and then raising on his own. This was before the matching gift, as you guys just heard. Raising on his own over 32 million pounds. When all he did, all he wanted to do, was just raise 1,000. That it showed that the people of the UK were really starving for some good news and really wanted to do something, which was really difficult to do when you're stuck inside and you're told you can't go outside and you know you're told if you do you're gonna catch you know, the Andromeda strain, and you're going to die immediately. You know, all this other mess that we were told, all these lies that we were told and everything. But in the midst of all that garbage, this guy came out and did his thing, and everybody said, you know what, I want to help. So that's really cool. But, Jeff, we've got lots and lots of show left. And one of the things that we've been covering a couple of petitions here, and we have some good news on one of them, which guys Jeff found himself. Okay, but the first one we want to get in here so that you guys living in the UK can go ahead and sign this and keep this going, because this needs to be dealt with now. The one I'm talking about is called Deport Omar, and you can get to it by going to tr.news at https://www.tr.news/deportomar, and then another slash. Deport Omar, by the way, guys, is one word. And you, if you listen to some of our shows in the past, we've covered this. This Omar individual was part of a little spud gang of three people that were terrorizing a neighborhood, had been doing it for 2 years, and we're basically doing a bio attack fairly early on during this Wuhan virus thing, when people were masking up and things like that. This was an elderly couple walking around, going shopping, and they came up on them and started coughing at them and spitting on them and stuff like that. And Tommy Robinson, just driving in that neighborhood, saw it and stopped it, and then got into a scuffle with them, and an older lady tried to intervene on Tommy's behalf and stop them from harassing this older couple, and they punched her in the eye. She got a black eye out of it. And came to find out that these guys are not unknown to the police, and this Omar character, an illegal alien from the Gambia, has a record of having been he's been convicted of having been caught in a car with a big knife and one firearm, and this petition is to have him deported. And as Jeff will tell you, he believes that this Omar character is now in prison, awaiting trial, and hopefully awaiting deportation. Jeff, have I covered that pretty well, brother?
Well, I think so. I couldn't be 100%, but that's something I did hear, and I think they was keeping him in prison for his own safety because he's inflamed the whole British public, and that is very dangerous when you piss off the whole British public. The safest place for you will be in your cosy place in a prison, which is all cosy because it's full of you lot. So that's the safest place for him. But I'm sure before the end of the year, there will be the case will go ahead for what they've all did, and the assault on Tommy, the assault on the lady that was intervening on Tommy's behalf, believe it or not, and of course on behalf of the older couple that was basically abused, coughed on, basically, and put the fear of life in. To me, it's a terrorist act, and it's what was talked about, and there should be a law that carries a terrorist act, because what they did, in my eyes, and like the general public, like the great British public, we all know that what they did was, in our eyes, a terrorist act, and he should be just got his gear together. They should put him on a plane or something, just drop him in the middle of the Indian Ocean somewhere and let him swim home. There you go, back to Gambia, in the middle from the Indian Ocean. But that's just me, Dave. And they're glad I'm not in charge. But anyway, hopefully we'll see some justice to be served, because it was so wrong. And we all see the video, the assault. And Tommy's children was in that car, and they smashed Tommy's back of the car up really bad. So they've been done for that, criminal damage, assault on Tommy, assault on that lady, and, of course, basically an assault on the elderly couple. And that's just for starters, they're just horrible, despicable people. But, yeah, let me pass it back to you, Dave, because I just get wound up with scumbags, because they are horrible, disgusting scumbags. They don't serve any purpose, do they? Just apart from thinking they're some sort of little gangsters, and it's horrible. Yeah. Anyway, back to you, mate.
All right, Jeff. Thank you, brother. And now the next one is one that that is beginning to see some action, guys. But if you live in the UK, it's still worth going and giving it a sign. All right, this one here has been, has been waiting here. I'm going to, has been waiting for 72 days for a debate date, and it is going to be debated in Parliament. They just haven't given it a date yet. All right, and this one is called Release the Home Office's Grooming Gang Review in Full. Now, this one currently, as I'm looking at it, sits at 126,150 signatures, and it has received some action. We've detailed some of that here before, but if you want to go and sign it, let's talk about that first, okay? It's https://petition.parliament.uk/petitions/300239. That number is 300239. And Jeff found a story related to this, because there have been some MPs and people like that who have gotten onto this and started to call for action. Okay, and I'll read a bit of this. Okay, won't do the whole story, but I'll read a bit of it. Jeff found this on The Independent. okay? And this was dated 2 days ago, okay? Now, the headline, grooming gang characteristics, that's in quotes, research to be published after government U-turn, okay? And the subhead for this is, what happened to these children remains one of the biggest stains on our country's conscience. That is from Preeti Patel. And this story, by the way, guys, is by Lizzie Dearden. Okay. She's a home affairs correspondent. All right. And we're going to get down into this a little bit, because if you guys have been listening to our show, you know that we've been on this, and there's been a little movement. So I'll read a bit of this, and then we'll move on, Jeff, because we do have quite a bit to talk about. All right, research on the characteristics, in quotes, by the way, of grooming gangs, let's just call them rape jihad gangs, guys, because that's what they are, is to be published by the government following a U-turn. In response to a Freedom of Information request by the Independent, the Home Office previously said releasing the paper would not be in the public interest. And you guys know how that sets Jeff off. In February, that's when that happened. All right. The response sparked a government petition that has so far been signed by, well, now over 126,000 people, demanding the release of the official research on grooming gangs, might as well call them rape jihad gangs, undertaken by the government in full. In its initial reply, the government said the work announced by Sajid Javid in 2018 was, quote, internal, end quote, and would inform an upcoming strategy on child sexual abuse. All right, and I'm going to bring this down so you guys, as I'm doing this, can hear that they were already beginning with the excuses. Well, this is just an internal document. You know, it's not meant for public consumption. Eh? Right. Okay, to continue with the story. But on Tuesday, the Home Office announced that it would publish a paper into group-based child sexual exploitation in order to better understand the characteristics of group-based offending and help deliver justice for victims. We're going to do this. The work was commissioned by the previous Home Secretary to better understand the scale and nature of group-based child sexual exploitation, including the characteristics of offenders, victims, and the context in which these crimes are committed, a spokesperson added. And I'm going to scroll down here, too. We all know what it is, but what's needed is for it to be out there. Now, I'll continue. The Independent understands that the format of the document to be published later this year, all right, has not yet been decided. An external reference group of experts is to be established to review the research before its publication. Now, watch out for that one, guys. I'm going to scroll down a bit. I would say watch out for that one.
They're going to be reviewing it and all that crap. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, Jeff, that's exactly what I was talking about, man. Watch out for that, external group of experts, because that's probably exactly who it's gonna be. Guys, you're going to have to keep signing that petition just so that you can show these people that, if you live in the UK, that you're serious about wanting the whole thing out there. Okay, I'll read just a bit more of this.
The truth and nothing but the truth, and nothing else will suffice. Just a pre-warning to all you think you're going to cover it up. No, you're not. No, you're not. We will make sure. We'll get to it, and we will expose you all for it. So you just carry on doing what you're doing. And as a warning to the government, you better put the full thing out. And don't hold nothing back. Back to you, Dave.
Well, you got it, Jeff. And I'll read two more paragraphs, and I think we're done, because this is the meat of this story, you know, anyway. So, and plus which, people can go to The Independent and find this story if they want to hear the whole thing. Priti Patel, who has met with survivors and the National Crime Agency on the issue, said, "Victims of these sickening child sex abuse groups have told me how they were let down by the state in the name of political correctness." Boom. That's huge. Okay, she says, "What happened to these children remains one of the biggest stains on our country's conscience. It is shameful. I am determined to deliver justice for victims and ensure something like this can never happen again." And I'll go ahead and stop the story there with the one comment, Jeff, before I turn it over to you. One good thing that you might want to do, Ms. Patel, is stop it from happening now, because it's still going on. And Jeff, let me turn it over to you for comment, brother.
Yes, certainly. It's refreshing to have someone from the Home Office that actually speaks about the plight and has spoke to some of the victims, and there's just been some horrific things. And she's come across some of the victims that we know so much about, and you know, generations of mothers, daughters, you know, this. It seems that she's done her homework, and I'm very pleased with what she's been doing. She's probably been one of the best in the Home Office that we've had for a very long time. So, Priti Patel, you've got the backing of us all. The nation is with you. Keep the fight going. Don't let them, you know, say this and that. Push forward. Let's get it out there. Let's get the truth of what's been going on to these poor kids. Dave, that's all I want to say. It's got to be better. If it goes out, that we know it's a lot of dark forces. That's why the government was trying to cover it up. We know who you are, and you need to realise that your position, you're there because people like myself and many other people in this country put you in that position. And don't forget, many people like me and 17.4 million of us can remove you from that position. Don't forget that. This is so important, especially with child exploitation, child rapists, and trafficking of our children. It's one of the biggest things that in this country, and it should be totally exposed. And the people that's been a part of what's been going on should be made aware that this is unacceptable, and they will be kicked out of our country if they come from the Pakistani descent. It's got to be shown that we're not taking no more of what they are trying to achieve, which we know is domination over the United Kingdom. We know what they're trying to do. It's all about Sharia, and stuff Sharia, stuff them, and we want justice for these kids. That's what needs to be done, and that's why we're speaking week in, week out. That's all I want to say about it. I know I go on a bit, but I feel so passionate, and it's just what's gone on to these kids. You can't take that away from them kids. They're going to have to live with that for the rest of their days, aren't they? You know, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah, it is, Jeff. And we will keep on with this, guys. Anytime we hear any new news on this, we will get it to you. We had to do some vetting on this one, but Jeff came through and found that story off The Independent. So, you know, good on you, Jeff. Guys, just stay tuned here, because we will, every time we come across this, we'll report on it, and we'll report on it until the end. One way or the other, how it ends, we will report on it, okay? And we can move on from there. Now, this, guys, is the festival, as I said, the Mohammedan festival of skipping lunch and violent jihad is drawing to a close, okay? And that is a good thing. It's always a good thing, because that means that the killing will at least, the killing and torture and kidnapping and other violent crimes will at least slow down again. But but we will report on it here. This is now day 28 of the Ramadan. All right, and if you want to find these figures, and if you want to find out why in the Quran and in the Hadiths and the Sirahs, why Mohammedans are motivated and given permission to do these things, go to thereligionofpeace.com. All right, that's where we're getting these figures from. And at currently, on the 28th day of Ramadan, there have been 159 attacks with 686 deaths. All right, and I'm going to scroll down. This here is the 21st, and we did our last reporting on this on the 17th. All right, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try and just list the countries and the incidents of attacks and things of that nature, which have happened since that date. Okay, and there have been quite a few. And I'm going to read you guys a figure that Jeff found from another source, okay, about Nigeria, because Nigeria this year they're always hit hard. Nigeria is always hit hard, but this year it's been seemingly harder than usual. And part of this, I think, is because the Nigerians haven't been hit as hard with this Wuhan thing as some other countries have, so these Mohammedans there have been working extra hard at their evil. Okay, we'll start here on the 17th in Afghanistan. Islamic radicals fire a point blank into a checkpoint, killing 8 officers. Also on the 17th, Somalia. 4 Somalis are blown to bits by a Shahid suicide bomber, okay? In Afghanistan, in Kabul, by the way, same day, terrorists opened fire on 2 Afghan officers, killing 1. In Indonesia, all right, you would expect more of these attacks in Indonesia, but it's so Islamized that, you know, that they don't have much to attack. A teenage girl is stabbed to death in an honor killing. Well, that's it right there. That's why that happens in mostly Islamic countries, by her brothers over immoral behavior. And it was probably something very minor, or, you know, something that we wouldn't even mind, but Islam has no room for fun or anything of that nature. Honor killing is common among Islamists, guys. Now, in Iraq, and Islamic State bomb blast kills, leaves 2 dead. All right. And again, you know, as I say, every time I run across one of these, don't let anybody tell you the Islamic State is dead and gone. It isn't. They just went underground, and they pop up and do their evil. Okay. In DR Congo, all right, 7 innocents are massacred by ADF Islamists. All right. And that's why you're seeing a certain amount of Congolese who are migrating not only to the States but also to the UK. Jeff, you know, you guys have a lot of them in London. Now, here you go, the 17th in Nigeria. Okay, Boko Haram gunmen mow down 20 villagers. So they do, guys. They just go into a village and just wipe them out. In Iraq, ISIS militants set fire to crops. All right, and kill a first responder. I had to correct their writing here a little bit. Still on the 17th in Nigeria again, 2 female suicide bombers take down 2 passersby. Okay, so and that's the thing, guys. Remember, your terrorists are not always going to be men. There are women who are just as radicalized in this cult of Islam as the men. Never forget that. All right, same day, Nigeria. A half dozen security personnel are stopped with a landmine and then shot with automatic weapons by jihadists. That sounds like a convoy or something. was stopped, and then they just mowed him down. It's a tactic that's been used many times. Same day in Nigeria, again, Boko Haram shoot dead a guard while looting a village. They do that too, by the way, guys. They will, you know, not only will they go to a village and kill a lot of people, they will go to a village and just take whatever they want. This is what they feel like they're owed because they're Muslims and they're owed this stuff, right? Okay. Now, I'm going to just check on something really quick here because I think Jeff might have called back in or might be calling back in, and he is, okay. And I'm going to continue, guys, to read this because this is the stuff that you need to know. All right. And I'm just going to find my place again here. All right. Now, on the 18th, all that stuff was just on the 17th, guys. On the 18th, in Nigeria, a resident is beheaded during a jihadist raid. Same day, Afghanistan, right, a massive suicide car bombing leaves 7 dead. Those are pretty nasty. Anytime. DR Congo, same day. A second ADF attack in as many days leaves 6 dead, including women. Again, they don't care who they kill. Men, women, children, babies, doesn't matter to them. And Pakistan, same day. Islamists detonate a bomb killing a soldier and a civilian in the resulting crossfire. Niger, the same day. All right, 12 local security personnel are murdered by Boko Haram. So I'm not sure if that's Niger or Nigeria, but Boko Haram doesn't just operate in one country, so I'm just going to go with this. All right, same day in Burkina Faso. All right, civilians are among those ambushed and killed by the, quote, group to support Islam and Muslims, end quote. That's a nice euphemistic name there. And okay, now we're up to the 19th here, guys. All right, and this is in Iraq. Jihadists successfully kill a local cop by placing a bomb under his car. And that's happened before, and it'll happen again, sadly. Same day, Afghanistan. Two children are among 4 civilians. Among 4 civilians pasted by Islamic shrapnel. You don't often see that word, guys. That's why I hesitated on that one. The same day, Afghanistan. A child is among the casualties of a mosque shooting that claims the lives of 3 brothers. On the same day again in Afghanistan. Here we go. 11 worshippers lose their lives when rivals open fire in their mosque. Again, guys, this as we keep pointing out, Muslim-on-Muslim terrorism is very real, and it goes on all the time. They suffer from it more than anyone else, but it is Islam that allows them to do that to them, themselves, and to us. Now, on the 19th in Egypt, okay, fundamentalists open fire on families inside their homes, killing 4 members. All right, now, guys, I'm going to find this here and get it to where I can read the rest of these, okay? And I'm gonna read that, okay, and let's find my place again. All right, now, 19th in Afghanistan. All right, and quote, insider, end quote, attack by a Talibani results in 5 dead police. All right, don't let anybody tell you that the Taliban is gone either, because they're still operating. Same day, same country. 3 people in and around a clinic are killed when it is bombed by religious hardliners. Right, on the 19th again, same day, same country, Islamic fundamentalists attack security checkpoint in a city, killing 8. All right, again, same day, same country, five people are shot in a car and then burned by the Taliban. All right. Now, same day, but in the Philippines, guys. A local soldier manning a quarantine is brutally murdered by Bangsamoro Islamists. Now, same day in Iraq, Mujahid sends a civilian to Allah with a well-placed explosive. Afghanistan, same day, a civilian is reduced to parts by a Taliban mortar round. In Somalia, now we're up to the 20th, guys, in Somalia, all right, in Mogadishu, by the way, the head of a medical team is assassinated by suspected Al-Shabaab, all right? And the last one we have here from the 20th is in India. All right. Now, this one says Muslim extremists opened fire on two border guards, killing both. Now, Jeff, that's the end of the list. And before I get to the thing you shared, do you have any comments, brother?
Well, it's... It just makes me think it's the typical Ramadan killathon. That's what's going through my mind, a Ramadan killathon, because it's the same. It might be a bit less than normal years. I think might be wrong, might be right. I'm not sure. We have got stats on it from last year, haven't we, Dave? So I'm not sure. But when you're talking about 600-plus people that have been murdered in cold blood a lot of the time, cold-bloodedly murdered, blown up, children being killed, murdered. It goes to show you all this. People seem to think that, and still you get some people say, well, Islam is a religion of peace. They just don't get it. They're so stupid, aren't they, these people? Don't they see it, or they don't want to see it? They switch off from it. We see these figures week in, week out. It might not be the Ramadan killathon, but we see it right away across the world that's going on. It hasn't stopped, and it does intensify with the Ramadan killathon. It always does, and there's certain other things that intensifies. It shows you, and I'm going to say it once again, the bloodlust of this cult knows no boundaries whatsoever. And the depravity of this death cult, once again, there is no boundaries. The more depraved, the better in their eyes. It's disgusting. And I want to pass it back to Dave because, you know, I like the God sometimes, some of the things I want to say, but I could be rather provocative. As if I'm not Dave. I bet you.
Well, I hear you, Jeff. And one of the things that got me in this one, and yeah, you're right. There's a definite slowdown this year, you know, because oftentimes by the time it reaches 28 days, it's over 1,000 people. I've seen some years, if I'm remembering right, I've seen like 1,500 dead, and that's just the dead, guys. We have to understand, that's just the dead. That's not the people that have been that have suffered every crime you can think of, robbery, just what you would call common assault to major assault, rapes, kidnappings, injuries that will
human
that
trafficking,
will
which I've done from the beginning. I never stopped for that day.
Injuries that will devastate them for life. People being crippled with arms off, legs off, people being blinded, things of that nature, burns, everything like that. So it's not just the deaths, all right? And that's something we have to remember. So that top figure that we give you every time that's just the tip of the iceberg, guys. That's what Islam tells these people that they can do. That's the permission that it gives them. Now, I found this. Jeff actually gave me this. And again, like I said, guys, he's been working hard. All right, this was put out on May the 20th. All right, by Christine Douglas Williams. Okay, and this came off of Jihad Watch. I'll read a bit of this. Okay, now this, as you guys have been hearing me read these lists, Nigeria's been hit hard. And in this one, the headline is Nigeria, at least 620 Christians are slaughtered by jihadists so far in 2020. Okay, that's just Nigeria. All right. Okay, so let's do this here. A Nigerian civil society organization, International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, estimates that about 620 Christians were killed and hundreds of homes as well as churches were damaged in Nigeria since the beginning of the year as attacks carried out by Fulani radicals and Islamic terrorists continue. Okay, Nigeria is really a bad hotspot for these guys. The genocide against Christians in Africa and the Middle East is ongoing, leading to a fatigued declaration by Catholic leaders last October. We are tired of burying our priests. That's big, especially as I scroll down, guys, especially when it comes from the Catholic Church. I'm sure that this didn't come from this poop of a pope that they have, but he's not the only one
called
that speaks
a bloody
the Catholic
crusade.
Church.
That's what I say. That time they called a crusade. Yes, we're fed up with seeing and upset about seeing priests and that sort of assassinated and killed. Time you call for a crusade. Is it long overdue? I'm sorry, Dave. I'm just thinking out loud because that's the way it feels, doesn't it?
No, it does, Jeff. It does. And remember, guys, the crusades forget the narrative that the left puts out there that the crusades were a bunch of evil Christians just going down and beating up on a bunch of Muslims. The Muslims began the impetus for the crusades because they invaded Christian lands and started doing exactly the sort of crimes that I talked about earlier. Okay, so that began the crusade. But anyway, I'll read a bit more of this and then we'll move on. All right, the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law stated, the atrocities against Christians have gone unchecked and risen to alarming apogee with the country's security forces and concerned political actors. Yeah, that's what it says. Concerned political actors looking the other way or colluding with the jihadists. Part of that is just because of pure cowardice. You know, because as we just pointed out, these guys will go into villages, these Muslims will go into villages and just tear them apart, wipe them out, wipe out all the people, sometimes capture the women for sex slaves, and loot everything they don't just burn. But I'll read one more paragraph. As far-fetched as this truthful statement may seem to Westerners, it is happening in the West also, albeit in a different way, as Muslim Brotherhood operatives work hand-in-hand with the political establishment. One of the tactics of sophisticated Western, stealth jihadists is to work within the framework of given countries to subvert them. And I'm going to stop that right there, guys, because they're talking there. Okay. All right. You want an example? I'll give you one from the UK first, okay? And that would be Sadiq Khan. One from the States, if you want one of those. I give you Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, all right? That Presley woman, But Linda Sowersewer over here, all these people working. Yeah. All these people working within the system, and lots of people in the UK doing the same thing. You've got ministers of parliament over there who are Mohammedans, working to slowly change our nations to be Sharia compliant. Jeff, I know you're going to want to go off a little bit on this, so please, head in there, brother.
Well, yeah,
come on in there.
It is Sharia compliant, and as it was said, the Catholic Church has said they are upset and fed up with so many priests being murdered and that. Then it's long overdue, what I will say, for the last crusade, because we need that crusade. It needs someone to stand up. And we know that Pope won't do it. He hasn't got the balls. He's not like some of the popes in the past that we would look towards. He's nothing like them. But it needs to be done. It needs to be called upon. It is our time to retaliate against these people killing Christians left, right and centre. There's so much suffering in Christianity at this moment, ladies and gentlemen. Right away across the globe, Nigeria, especially Africa, they are suffering greatly. And you know what? There's more Christians being baptised every day than Muslims are being, assimilated into their fold. That is it. This is the way that people are. Even though they're under persecution and being wiped out, they still want to come to the Lord Jesus for their saviour. That goes to show you. That's powerful, isn't it, Dave? That you'd rather die than have yourself converted to a death cult. And God bless all those that have passed before, because the good Lord is looking out for those dear people that died in his name. I just want to say that, mate. I want to say that, mate.
Well, and you're absolutely right to say it, Jeff. I mean, there's been, of course, religious persecution against Christians in both the UK and in the United States, especially with this Wuhan virus. You saw that was a perfect opportunity. You just look at the contrast over here in the United States. It's perfectly fine over here to visit an abortion clinic, or to visit a superstore, like what would be a Tesco over there, I suppose you would say, but over here, it would be like a Walmart or something like that. It's perfectly fine to do that, but you can't go to church. That's what some of these local officials, local state, county officials, most of whom, sad to say, are Democrats, okay, and I hate to put a political face on that, but that's the truth. It is persecution of Christians, and it is what they've been waiting for, but, you have to look at it from the other perspective, too. That's just the beginning. The end of it is what the Christians in Nigeria are suffering. And this, of course, isn't new. This has been ongoing. This has just been accelerated, all right, this year, because they know they can get away with it now. They've got enough of the government over there cowed and subverted or paid off to where they can just do this stuff. And yes, for the Christians in Nigeria.
I remember something that happened with the Holocaust, never, ever again. And what they're doing, they're turning their backs on Christians across the world. There's a mass genocide that's going on. And it's they're turning their backs on it. And I think it's shameful. It's shameful that people that could do something should send people out to confront these evil people that are doing these absolutely horrific crimes against the faith of Christianity. It's what should be done. Unfortunately, we've got too many cowards in the Western, parliamentary thing, who haven't got the balls to speak up and to do something to lead the country and go and sort these problems out, because the people of Nigeria, have suffered so much, not only in there, but across Africa. And we're hearing these stories every day. That one that Dave talked about is just one of many that comes across my desk every day. So this is going on, and it seems like uncontrolled. Everybody's turning their backs. I won't. I refuse to. And I will speak every time I've got to talk on this radio show. We will talk about these issues because it's important to me. I'm a Christian. I'm Christian, and it breaks my heart to think people are being persecuted, killed, set alight. Families, young kids. You know, something's got to be done. Anyway, sorry, Dave, I just had to vent a little bit on that because I know it gets to you the same way, Dave, and what you do, mate, you know, this is what we're here for. We project what we feel about these things because we know there's so many people out there who would go along with exactly what we're talking about. But anyway, back to you, mate.
Yeah, as I was about to say, too, I was about to speak to any listeners that we might have in Nigeria. All right, and, you know, guys, we're going to do the best we can to keep highlighting the issues that are going on over there with this genocide that has been going on. And we're going to try and do what we can to pressure our governments to do something about it. That because the hard political forces, the leftists in both of our countries, are trying to tell us that there's not a problem, that we shouldn't accept as immigrants, people from places like Nigeria, if they're Christian, or things of that nature, because that they would have to admit then that there's a problem with Islam in Nigeria. But we are going to keep holding up what is going on with you guys to our audience, so that they can understand and pressure their governments. Okay, you know, people in the UK, you need to write number 10 about this. And people in the States, okay, you need to write President Trump about, you need to write President Trump about this. Okay, we can intervene. We are not paper tigers. If we choose not to be, if we have the will, we can intervene. And we should. And Jeff, before I move on, I'll turn it back over to you for final
well said,
comment.
Dave. No, well said. I really appreciate your words. I knew you had something you wanted to talk about that, and well said, mate. Well said. Because it has to be. Someone's got to speak up because there's too many people turning, ignoring what's going on, and it's people like us who see these stories, and it's really upsetting, isn't it, Dave? It's distressing to think that we look and we're speaking out against it, but those in power just turning their backs. Total cowards. I hope you're listening, Johnson and all that lot. You see what's going on. I thought you cared about people. I thought you was a Christian. I thought we was a Christian country. I'm sure, being a Christian country, we would help our Christian brothers and sisters. But sadly, we haven't got the politicians with the bottle to do what's right. Sadly, Dave. Back to you, brother.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, now, guys, we're going to turn to another thing here. Because this show, we have just enough time to get this in, I think. This show is called Arbitrary Days, and it's because of a story that I caught from the Daily Mail. And Jeff and I had some discussion about this. It's very interesting. Now, we don't usually discuss this guy, all right? But this is about a fellow named Paul Golding, okay? And this story, if you want to go looking for it, was updated on the 20th, all right? And it's from the Mail Online, as I said. And I'm going to read the headline and the bullet points here and come down and try to find the relevant passage in here that has to do with the title of the show, too, okay? That's what I'm going to try and do, Jeff. So here we go. The headline, Britain First Leader Paul Golding gets suspended sentence for refusing to give police his phone's PIN at Heathrow when he returned from a trip to Moscow. All right, that's the headline. Now, the subheads here, or the bullet points. First one, Paul Golding was stopped by Met Police, Metropolitan Police officers, at Heathrow Airport in October. Okay, so this is the courts are opening back up, guys. But I find this story interesting. Jeff and I both find this story fascinating. Next bullet point. The 38-year-old who was on the way back from visiting the Russian parliament, Moscow. Next bullet point. The Britain First leader refused to give the pins for his phone, hard drive, and laptop. Next bullet point. He was later charged with refusing to comply with duty under, and this is the sweet spot here, duty under the Terrorism Act. Next bullet point. He was found guilty following trial at Westminster Magistrates Court in London. And why they threw this one in, I don't know, except that they have had some cordial relations recently. That's his choice, not ours, but I'm going to go ahead and read it anyway. Last bullet point, EDL founder Tommy Robinson watched the proceedings in court's public gallery. And I'm just going to go down and find the relevant part of this, guys, in the story, because it does point out why I called it as I did. Ms. Bright, who was counsel, by the way, defense counsel for Mr. Golding, said he was tired and had not willfully disobeyed a lawful instruction, and that evidence from officers left the court, quote, none too wiser, end quote, as to whether they had, quote, screened against, end quote, Schedule 7 being used, here you go, in an arbitrary way. In other words, they were using this aspect, this particular part of the Anti-Terrorism Act to try and get Golding to open up his phone and, as you guys heard, his laptop and hard drive for them to look at. They tried it under this terrorism provision, okay, and he felt that that was an imposition on his civil liberties, all right, and that's why he did not give them his information. He was not given very much of a penalty for this, by the way, guys. I want to try to find exactly how much in this he was charged. I know, Jeff, you're going to want to make a comment on this, but he was given a fine, a very small fine, less than 40 pounds, I believe it was. And he had to pay court costs, which I believe were less than 1,000 pounds. So they gave him basically, even though they found him guilty, they basically gave him a very small slap on the wrist here. And that really is what, you know, had this been Tommy Robinson, we know that he'd be in prison right now. So that was really what caught my eye was that the sentence, by the way, here it's a conditional discharge for 9 months, so they basically put him on probation for 9 months, and he was ordered to pay a 21-pound surcharge and 750 pounds in court costs. Okay, so Jeff, I'm gonna turn this back over to you, because this really is a kind of a fascinating case from your and my viewpoint, right?
Oh, well, in my perspective, I look at it this way, he appeared in Russia. He attended something at the Russian parliament, and when he returned, the Metropolitan Police pulled him in and basically charged him with a terrorist act. Well, I'm sure anybody that's travelled over to Russia before hasn't come back because he used to do, probably because he's the Britain's first leader, that there was, they found that that was a problem. Unless he was doing terrorist activities, which he was not, I can't see anything, and then there's nothing there to say anything like that. So they bring a charge with terrorism related, and what he's basically, he's walked out free, he's walked out a suspended sentence, but guess what? He's got the thing, the label hanging over him as terrorist activities. He was found guilty of terrorist related activities. So that means that the police can go in at his place at any time and say, well, we're sure he was doing terrorist related things. Very dangerous president, ladies and gentlemen. Once you have a label put on your class as a terrorist, you can be taken out of the picture. I won't put nothing past, and I mean, I've got myself, my friends Paul Golding, I've got no time for, but his, his freedom and those things I hold very dearly. Whoever it is, I think it's disgusting that you're going about your business. And he's a politician. I mean, you know, people want to call him, he's a politician. He's got a right to go over and speak to people the type of persuasion of what he sees it. This is a right leaning parliament or something like that he was in talks with. You know, he's got a right to do that. He's a politician, isn't he, Dave? And that's what I'm saying. The whole thing stinks. And I would say to go, would you be very careful? They got your card marked, mate. They got your card marked. They could do the same with Tommy. Tommy cleared up. You know he. And Tommy could end up doing some serious time because they just wouldn't bang Tommy up. But anyway, let me pass it back to you. Just throwing it. The word terrorist related. See, they can throw that around now. And once you get the label hanging over your head, which he has now, that sets the future for him. He's got to be really, really aware of what he was actually found guilty of. Back to you, Dave, because we're all getting near the end now, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm going to try and be quick, Jeff, because we don't have much time. But first of all, good point. All right, that's one I hadn't even thought of. Second of all, they say that politicians enjoy enhanced freedom when it comes to their privacy and things like that in the UK. That should be enjoyed by every citizen. Now, as Jeff says, both he and I have issues with Golding and his compatriots. Jan Rennie and I did a show a few years ago highlighting some of that, and it was really good. You go to the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com, or you can look this up. I think I did put it on YouTube as well, and it's called BFBS. And we really did a good job, I think. Factually, on some of the nefarious activities of Paul Golding and his Broheims, okay, and the guy is a confidence trickster. He's a con man. I'm just going to say just going to give the comment that I gave when I posted this story in social media. I said scam artist, yes. Terrorist, no. All right, and that I think is the crux of it. I'm going to go ahead and give my final thoughts. It's been a heck of a show, man. You've done very well with points you brought up and a lot of hard work. So good on you with the stories and whatnot.
Thank you, guys.
And you're welcome, man. You're welcome. And I hope the people got a lot out of this show. We will be back on, the next time we're back, guys, we're going to be talking about Memorial Day here in the United States, and we'll have other stories, of course, to go along with the stuff from across the pond here, and you just hang on to your hats, guys, because we'll have more stuff. And I just want to say to the foot soldiers, to the angels, and to I just want to say, first of all, check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. That's where my shows are. I go from 1 p.m. Eastern in the United States, Monday through Friday, and at midnight on Saturday in the United States. And that is 6 p.m. in the U.K., Monday through Friday, and 5 a.m. in the U.K. on Saturday. I'm also available on Western Free Radio, and you can also hear me on SHR Media. And tonight, you should be able to hear me on the Exceptional Conservative Network with Ken McClinton. I'll be doing a segment with him, and that should be on right around 2 a.m. Tomorrow morning for you guys in the U.K., so check that out as well. And now I want to say to the foot soldiers, angels, and to all of the freedom-loving heroes who have been keeping the fight up, and to my Christian brothers and sisters, especially in Nigeria, be prosperous, be healthy, be blessed, and no surrender ever. Jeff, back to you, brother.
Thank you, Dave. Once again, thanks for the great script and the slides this evening. With that, we got to say good night. God bless everybody's listening in. I hope you've enjoyed the shows as much as, yes, I do get passionate, I do get angry sometimes, but she blamed me. But anyway, we'll see you again this Sunday. Just to let you know, this is the 8th year we've been doing the EDL radio show now. Do you know that? We're into the 8th year. Mm-hmm. So once again, thank you, all the great listeners out there. With that, we're going underground. Come on, guys. I want you. Here we go.
People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys again. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, I don't mind. My New Zealand friends was for Tommy's wife. And the public gets what the public wants. Pleasure as I hate me, I've been up already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. You see, here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader to place your trust, and their lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets, but I don't give up.
They've got their tune in all right tonight. So, yeah, guys, we'll be back again this Sunday. So, you know, we'll have plenty more that we'll be discussing this weekend, I guarantee you, as you know. So, from myself and from Dave, from everybody that's associated with the EDL radio show and the EDL, thank you so much for tuning in this evening. And we'll see you again this Sunday. Okay? So with that, this is the English Defence League radio show signing off for tonight. You stay safe. God bless you. And as they said, no surrender. No surrender ever. Good night, guys. God bless.